Health is a non-for-profit contracting agency for health programs, primarily funded by USAID. They do programs in over 40 countries worldwide and have over 1,000 employees worldwide. A lot of the work that we do, some of our biggest projects have to do with pharmaceutical systems, leadership and management for capacity building of organizations. And we work in technical areas such as HIV, malaria, tuberculosis, and reproductive health. And this project that I worked on fell into that last category. So a quick overview of what I'm going to be discussing today. How I found my practicum site, conducting a CAP study, or a knowledge, attitudes, and practice study. Some of the challenges I came up against while completing my practicum. Some of the outcomes, lessons learned, and a brief update. So finding the practicum site was really important to be specific when looking for a practicum, to know what I wanted. I was an international health and maternal and child health concentrator and knew that I wanted to be working in reproductive health. I had experience living in West Africa, in Niger, for a couple years, and I spoke French fluently and wanted to continue working in that region. So I wrote a cover letter. I sent my updated CV to my contacts that I knew working in public health and some faculty at BU. And within 24 hours, I had a response from Jim Wolf, who we've all acknowledged here today, who had sent my information out to some of his field contacts. And the Guinea Project was interested in having me come and complete my practicum with them. So for those of you who are students, perhaps, looking for practicum opportunities, I recommend really using your contacts. APHA, I think, is a great way to do that. Go up to the exhibit hall and network with the people that you meet up there. And also, if you're interested in management sciences for health for a practicum site, let me know after the session. So my practicum site was in Guinea. I worked with the PRISM 2 project, which was a USAID-funded project from 1997 to 2007. The main objectives of the PRISM project were to improve the quality and use of family planning and reproductive health services, as well as the prevention of sexually transmitted infection and HIV. And they worked primarily in Upper Guinea. There had two offices, one in Kankan, which was where most of their programmatic most of the programs were run out of that office. And then they had an office in Conakry, which was much smaller for staff who were there for short-term technical assistance or if the CONCON staff went in to meet with ministry officials or other organizations. I was in the CONCON office, which is about 8 to 12 hours by road, depending on how bad the roads happened to be at the time. So it was quite a ways out. I worked on a pilot cervical cancer screening program. The program was originally started by Dr. Namori Keita. He started the project in Conakry and at a neighboring urban center. They had great success with that program, and he approached USAID to see if he could expand that project, and they agreed to fund a pilot project in three urban centers in Upper Guinea, and they asked the PRISM project to implement. So this, when I arrived there, it was a fairly new project that had just gotten off the ground. And I was working with, of course, Namori Keita, who is the doctor who designed the study, or designed the program, the program manager, who was based in CONCON, the monitoring and evaluation team. And basically, I led a team to conduct a study for the knowledge, attitudes, and practice of the service providers who had been trained to do the cervical cancer screening, women who had been screened, and women who had not yet been screened in the target population. We implemented the pilot cervical cancer screening program in three urban centers, Farana, Sigiri, and Kankan. They were implemented in 11 urban health centers and three regional hospitals, and they had trained 42 service providers to implement the program, including doctors, nurses, and midwives. This is a map of Guinea. I'm sorry, it's very busy. As you can see on the ocean there is Conakry. And then way out to the east is Kankan, so it's quite a bit away from the capital city on the border with Mali there. So some of the norms and procedures to the program. Our target population were women between the ages of 25 and 59. This is the population is due to the fact that cervical cancer is detected in women younger than the age of 30, so we added 5 years as a buffer. The population coverage goal was a minimum of 5 women screened per day per site. We recommended a frequency of screening. Our goal was to screen each woman once in her lifetime in the catchment area, and then we counseled them to return for screening once a year. The screening method was visual inspection methods with acetic acid or Lugol's iodine. And basically what that is you use the liquid, it's a wash of the cervix, and if there are lesions there, the lesions will turn color, and it's a way to visually inspect for cervical cancer rather than doing a PAP, which is often too costly for developing country settings. Doctors, midwives, and nurses were trained. The doctors conducted all treatment. And there was an integrated method used to reach a target population, meaning that women, regardless of the reason they were coming to the health center, were offered cervical cancer screening and were supposed to be counseled, and informed consent was requested. This is, I apologize, the slide is in French, and it's also a little busy, but basically it's just to give you an idea of the flow of the project. The top 4 squares are the urban health centers, and the larger square in the center there is the regional hospital. IVA and IVL were conducted. If there was a positive, they were referred to the regional hospital for colposcopy and biopsy. Biopsies were sent to the national laboratory in Conakry. And then if there was invasive cancer, they were also referred to the National Hospital in Conakry for treatment. Colposcopy, for those of you who don't know, is a method of being able to remove the lesion on site through freezing of the cells. So we began the screening in February of 2006, and in May of 2006, we collected this data. Based on the criteria to cover 5 women per day per site, we were able to project the number of clients that each site should see, look at how many clients they actually screened, and then calculate a coverage rate based on this. And as you can see, the coverage rate in each of the 3 urban areas was quite varied. Particularly in Siguiri, we were concerned. Only 25% coverage was achieved. We were a bit concerned about why there was this variation. So that's when Dr. Keita came up with the idea to do an informal CAP study to find out what women knew about the project, what the trained service providers knew, and how they were implementing the project, and sort of identify the needs at each of the health centers so we could really go and iron out the project at the beginning of the project when it was still in the pilot phase. Again, just restating the study objectives were to identify the knowledge, attitudes, and practices in the trained service providers and the target population, and then based on that information to recommend strategies and activities that would improve cervical cancer screening and management of cervical cancer. So these were some of the activities that I did while I was in Guinea last summer. I developed 3 questionnaires, one for each of the study population, for the service providers, for women who had been screened, and for women who had not yet been screened. With the monitoring and evaluation team, I did develop the study design with them. We also recruited and hired interviewers who we then sent out to the field to collect the data. We trained the interviewers. We did a test of the questionnaire over 1 weekend in Kankan, which is where we were located, and made revisions to the questionnaires based on that test. And then I did go to the field and oversee the data collection and help the team respond to roadblocks that they came across while they were conducting interviews. In addition, because I was free labor, there are invariably tasks that do arise. I was asked to translate their quarterly report, which they were developing. Additionally, there was an MSH staff member who came from headquarters who did not speak French. So during her week of activities there, I accompanied her along and translated for her. As a result of this, my time at the end was very limited, and I collected all this information and wanted to get a look at what it was about. So I rapidly took the information from the questionnaires and put it into an Excel spreadsheet just to get a quick and dirty look at some of the issues that we were coming up against so I can make some preliminary recommendations. And then I wrote my trip report and as a result had my final paper for my international health concentration. As a result, we had 333 interviews were conducted. I was able to hand off the data and the completed questionnaires to the M&E staff for them to analyze. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to participate in that analysis due to the limited time, and I had my final paper for international health. The preliminary data did identify, and this is just a quick and dirty look that I was able to glean, that there were some issues with the screening program, as we suspected. Each service providers were asked to complete forms on each of the women that they screened, and they were quite cumbersome. They were collecting a lot of information, and the forms weren't always clear to them anyway, and there was some confusion in how to complete them, and as a result, our data was incomplete. So I was able to recommend a simplified form and decrease the number of questions we were asking for the service providers. In addition, women who were biopsied, we were taking their information so that we could contact them with their biopsied results in case they didn't come back for their results. And their information was often incomplete, so it was hard to follow up with these women. We found that the patient counseling and getting informed consent hadn't been, the training for that was not sufficient. Often, the providers were not giving complete information to the women coming in for screening, and that was flagged as a major problem, and we recommended follow-up training. Women who had not undergone screening were not aware of cervical cancer and what it was as a problem. There was some resistance to pelvic exams among this population, especially in one of the regions as compared to the others. And so there was also some confusion between HIV screening and cervical cancer screening, as a similar campaign had been launched for HIV screening. So we wanted to make sure to get a campaign going so that we could fully inform the population of the differences and let them know the importance of cervical cancer screening. A nice thing that came from this is that we really saw that there was great variation in problems between the different regions. And it helped us to not only pinpoint from urban center to urban center, but also clinic to clinic, so we could really pinpoint and iron out the problems at each specific site. Some of the challenges that I came across while I was there, there was a national strike in Guinea during my time there. There had been some political unrest, and two of the major labor unions came together to conduct a strike. There was some violence and talk of evacuating me to Mali as a result. Luckily, that didn't happen. Things calmed down. But that was a challenge. The office was shut down for a couple weeks. And as a result, I wasn't able to go in and work at the office with the field team for a couple weeks. So that sort of delayed the work as well. Communication was an issue. If any of you are familiar with Guinea, you know that the phone systems there are not barely functioning. So being in Konkan and communicating with the doctor in Conakry and with the chief of party in Conakry was often difficult if I needed rapid answers. Language, the field office and headquarters, French and English was sometimes an issue. There was miscommunications that needed to be ironed out, which I was able to help them with. The interviewers, there was some issues with per diem rate that needed to be ironed out that did cause for some tension. And during the data collection, as always, you come across not being able to have, finding enough women to interview, and just dealing with the realities of collecting data in a field setting, and how to be creative and iron out those issues. Time was an issue as well. As I've mentioned, The field staff had other priorities. They were working on their quarterly report. They had several other programs going on. I was there to conduct this CAP study and really relying on them to help me out, which they did, but they were stretched for time, as was I. I had added activities to my scope of work, such as the person from headquarters who came in and needed a translator. And it was a 2-month practicum with lots of stuff to do, so it was just, it was very full. Some of the rewards were that I worked with an outstanding, dedicated field team. People, despite their busy schedules, did stay with me late at the office. And those final days and hours when I was taking the data from the questionnaires, I had everyone helping me put data into an Excel spreadsheet, from the receptionist to the IT guy. Everyone really pulled together and helped out, so that was very rewarding. Even though it added to my scope of work, I was able to go to the field with this person from headquarters and visit various projects that the PRISM project was doing, meet beneficiaries of the projects, meet trained community-based distributors who were extremely proud of the work that they were doing and the health education they were doing for their communities, and that was extremely rewarding. And just experiencing the intricacies and difficulties of working in a field project, where when you're sitting in a classroom, in theory, everything sounds great, but when you get to the field, really seeing how challenging it is, and yet exciting and rewarding. And learning by doing and doing important work. From the time I got there, the field team didn't look at me as an intern or free labor or all the time, but they really looked at me as a colleague and someone that they could work with as an equal, and that was incredible. And knowing that the work that I was doing was ultimately going to impact the women who were coming for cervical cancer screening, and that it was going to iron out some of the issues and that hopefully would save lives, that was ultimately the whole reason why I was there. So lessons that I learned was to expect the unexpected, to be flexible and creative, that you never have enough time or enough resources, but somehow it always gets done, so to keep your cool, and really pulled together, really the team, when I pulled together with them in those last few days, it was amazing. And that's my last slide. I do want to thank Dr. Jim Wolf and the field team that I worked with. In addition, this practicum did lead to my current employment, so it's always a nice entryway into your career. So that's it. Thank you.
So we can field questions now, individually or as a group, if anyone has any questions.
Basically, I had had some experience abroad, limited experience. I went to Ghana for 3 months to study abroad, so that's where I sort of got a baseline familiarity with nutrition, which I was interested in. And but I would suggest, you know, think about what you're interested in. You know, what field would you be interested in? Then just talk to your professors, see what professors are working in that same field, and see what opportunities are out there. And I think, from my own experience, you know, you don't have to know everything going into a practicum. Everything I learned in my practicum, I had no experience in whatsoever. And I feel like I really know a technical skill, or at least a preliminary level of that skill. And I think you just need to, if you go after something that you really want to do, you'll get it.
So the only real kind of thing on my resume that got me into my practicum was that I was fluent in Spanish, but I didn't have any skills in, you know, field work at all. And originally I was going to be the only practicum student down there, but then I think the team realized the scope of the work that we were doing and that they were just kind of desperate to recruit more people. So we recruited, or they recruited two additional practicum students, and one of the girls, the girl that actually designed the chat, had, I think, like one or two semesters of Spanish and was fluent in Japanese, but not really any Spanish. And she went down there a month before we did a really intensive language study, and I couldn't believe what she came out of the practicum being down there for 2 to 3 months, like almost fluent in Spanish, basically didn't have Spanish before she went down there, but was really a key team member in doing other aspects. Like, she designed all of the educational parts and, you know, gained the skill of learning a lot of Spanish. So I wouldn't, if you're really interested in something that's abroad with a different language, I wouldn't let that hinder you so much. I mean, it's not, it might be more difficult to get into, but definitely consider the opportunity of, I mean, if you have the time to go down and, or to go wherever and try to learn a little bit, because you might not need to be fluent in something.
Add briefly, but also, I don't think you may be selling yourself short somewhat, so really think about what your strengths are and think about how to frame it and market it, because often you've got a lot to, you have an education, you've been getting your master's in public health, you've completed coursework, you're strong in something, so figure out what it is and then market it and sell it, and that's a great way to get your foot in the door.
I run the practice program at Boston University School of Public Health. And so that's the question that students come in with. What do I do next? What's that next step? And if you're really interested in doing something internationally, that next step is, where is that going to be? And some of the international practica are competitive, and especially if you're looking going within a large organization. It's easier if you can work with a professor or someone on a specific project. But if you really want to go with WHO or something like that, it's a little bit more difficult. So you have to find out where you want to go, look at that specific program, and do it early enough. And as Karen said, it's important for you to say, these are the skills that I have. And by skills, you can say background in classroom experience, and this is what I'm really interested in doing, and this is how I can help you. And so while you may not feel you have a lot of field experience, it's really important to say, this is what I'm interested in, and this is how I'm going to be able to help you. And just having the confidence to do that and finding exactly where you want to go really narrows it down. And if it's two or three programs that you're applying to at an early enough stage, hopefully things will work out. Any other questions? Quality of the work for the individual student to make sure that things are going according to plan. But as far as expected that students to travel internationally, it's obviously a big benefit to the students who are in international health and want to do work in international health to be able to travel internationally. But the funds, at least at our school, there aren't any. I mean, there's zero funds. And so that makes it really difficult for the students to be able to do that. And so that's one challenge. And while there are some funding opportunities out there for individuals, a lot of people have to put up some of their own funds. I assume all of you put in some of your own funds going into that. So that's something that's really hard and difficult, at least at Boston University. I know it was about 4 years ago, there was a student that was really dedicated in trying to do some work internationally, and she struggled with just paying her regular tuition, and so she went to a local organization in Boston and said, I want to do some traveling, I'll provide you with a blog. And it was John Hancock, which has a lot of funds for the community, and she got wonderful feedback. She sent something back, an update each week on the work that she was doing, and she said, this is how I'm using your money. And so there are ways to do it, but it's a struggle for each of the students. And I know at least at Boston University, and I assume at other places.
They expect students to want to intern there, and it's, you know, an honor to intern there, which it really is, you know, because what you get out of it is amazing. You may not always have a great practicum, but the people that you meet, the networking opportunities are great, you know, so it's, you balance it, you know, you get you have a great practicum that can influence what you do in the future, you know, and but you have to sacrifice with the funding, so it's hard.
Try and do that. The difficulty, at least at BU, is that there are about 200 students who are placed in practicum each year, and the number of students that do them internationally is probably about 60. So it's a good portion of students that do international placements. That said, a lot of our students are in the International Health Department, and they're the largest department at our school right now. But the capacity of our office to actually do follow-up with international organizations, it's hard because there isn't the staff to do that. So actually the IH department helps in that in that process, because their department is so dedicated to making sure that those placements are available. So while we ask in evaluations, is the organization willing to provide opportunities again? When they do that, we'll send them some general information, but the follow-up on our end in the office is minimal. While the International Health Department, outside of the practice office, really tries to maintain and foster new relationships with new organizations, whether through faculty or new relationships.
Actually only in Nicaragua for about a month. I went to meetings before I left, and I couldn't afford to be out of the country not working for more than a month. So being on a student's budget, I worked really, really hard right before I left, made up the extra money that I would not be making the month I was gone, and went down there. But I'm still working with them. I mean, I have a meeting tomorrow night or Thursday night, so even though I'm not there anymore, I'm still involved in the project, but I definitely got the 104 hours in because we were working, you know, 18 hours a day. So I put in a lot of hours, but in a very short time.
When I applied to the WHO, I proposed that I would be there the whole summer just because I wanted to get the most out of it. And so I proposed 3 months, and based on that, they proposed a project to me. So the project that was proposed to me, I would have never gotten that project if I wasn't there for 3 months, because I literally finished on the last day of the project, and I worked a lot. I mean, I worked more than full time for, you know, to do that. So what I saw actually, that it's good that you come up with that question, because time, I think, is a crucial part of the internship. And at the WHO, they have a lot of interns during the summer, and interns are there 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 2 months, 3 months, but the interns that are there for 6 to 8 weeks don't have that product, you know, when they come out. And they do have that experience of networking with people, you know, they do understand somewhat the bureaucracy of the organization, which are really important parts of the internship. But to come out from a practicum and really have a product, you know, really to have done like what we did, I think is, you know, additionally rewarding, and you really learn some kind of skills. And so at least for being in the WHO, I would definitely recommend at least 3 months. And that's a problem with funding, and it was for me too. You know, I worked a lot before and I work after, but exactly. But it's, if I wasn't there for 3 months, there's no way I would have gotten the experience that I got.
I second what you say about the amount of time you're there. You know, going overseas, you want to be able to make sure you can do something significant. My 2 month time period was based on the fact that I had a full-time job and I took a leave of absence from that job, and I had a very generous boss who allowed me to leave the office for 2 months to complete this practicum. But he, rightly so, because he worked at the School of Public Health and was a faculty, and I worked at the School of Public Health while I got my degree, so I think he was very understanding. But that was my time, why I chose a 2 month period.
The way that we foster these opportunities, it's really up to the organization and the student to figure out what best works for them. While we have minimum number of hours set for the amount of credits that students do, that oftentimes has no bearing on how many hours the student does with the organization, because it's really up to the organization. And I always tell organizations, you have to let the students know what's going to work for you, because if it doesn't work for the organization, it's just not going to work, period. So, you know, hopefully the students, if an organization says we really need someone for 300 hours, you know, it's up to the student to say, well, I can give you 100, you know, 150, and this is how I can be helpful. And if the student can convince the organization of that, then great. But it's really up to, you know, the student and the supervisor to really figure out what's going to work for both of them, because the student has stresses with other things that's going on in their lives, and the organization oftentimes has a hard time dedicating staff to make sure that the practicum are run in the way that they should be.
Thank you.
Caucus, who sponsors this event, would like you to fill out. And you can just leave them on your chair or at the back before you leave. That would be great.